superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Barons win! Barons win!
Cody Jansen stopped 92 out of 95 shots, including a penalty shot in overtime. Somehow he still only wound up the third star of the game.
You like that?
Jansen has a heart.
Y'all smoking crack!
It's Tuesday, Oilers game day, and it's World Hockey Report presented by Lordco Auto Parts, the official auto parts retailer of Hockey Canada and Team Canada. If you're going to the rink, Lordco is going to make sure you got everything you need for a smooth ride, from bright white headlight replacement bulbs for increased visibility during early morning or late night commutes to battery maintainers that are going to ensure your vehicle starts when the temperature drops. Visit a Lordco Auto Parts location today for knowledgeable service, quality parts, and accessories. Visit Lordco.com to find a store near you. So much to get to today, and we appreciate you hopping in the chat. Join the conversation anytime if you're watching on 12 Ounce Sports, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, wherever you are watching from. You can follow us on Twitter at WorldHockeyRPT. I'm there at Janner31_. On today's show, we'll kick it all off. Adam Erwitrout's going to hop on in about 20 seconds. Time then's Tucker Sargent. University of Montana Grizzlies hockey, they have changed the face of hockey there. They've got the best atmosphere in all of the ACHA. I'm telling you, you got to check it out. It's crazy what Tucker's done. We had to get him on the show. I've been bugging him for weeks now to come on. So he's going to come on in about 16 minutes time, then at 12:40 open line. Everything you want to talk about, we'll dive into it. We also got some interesting comments from Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Dave Tippett this morning. If you're an Oilers fan or a fan of the Pacific, I think you want to hear it. There's some interesting stuff. That's all coming up in about 35 minutes time. Let's just say roughly. Join the conversation anytime. Get those thoughts in. As we welcome on Adam Erwitrout to talk about the Flames, who lost 3-2 last night to the Anaheim Ducks. That's a disappointing loss for the Flames, but assuming you caught a fair amount of it, what went wrong? How do they lose? I mean, this is a team that you can't be losing against. Anaheim is in full rebuild mode, and the Calgary Flames, I don't know, there's not too many, you know, better chances for them to be in a win now mode, because Gaudreau is going to be a UFA, and if you're giving away points to the Anaheim Ducks, you're in trouble.
Yeah, they John Gibson was awesome last night. He's so good. He's so inconsistent though. Like, the Lindholm goal, the Flames' second goal, he's like goes for this weird pad stack that beats him five hole instead of just like being square to the puck. But he was awesome. He made 45 saves. So he was really good. But I mean, for the Flames, they just, I don't know, it's tough. Like, they don't really get a whole lot from a lot of different guys. Like, you know, Gaudreau and Tkachuk and Blake Coleman were awesome. And, you know, Mangiapane is really good, but you got your Sean Monahans, your Michael Backlunds, like, you just, your Dylan Dubé. They don't really get enough from the heart of their lineup and, you know, their top guys. And Sean Monahan, I said this yesterday on the OT winner, Hanifin makes a brutal toe drag, and then Monahan just gets walked, like, in the defensive zone, offensive zone, feet standing still, guy toe drags him, and it was a bad look for him. And for the Flames, if you're not getting Gaudreau, Tkachuk, Lindholm to really take over games and get you a couple of points, then you're looking on the wrong end. And for Calgary, they want to play these 2-1 games, and sure enough, they get scored on late and lose in OT, so it hasn't really been the best start for them.
No, and I feel like maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't, you know, maybe it's the Sutter mentality that's faking me out here, but the Flames are, they're almost trying too hard to play in these 2-1 low-scoring games with the Daryl Sutter system. Like, sometimes you just gotta let the horses run. Like, Gaudreau didn't look bad last night, man. Like, he was
buzzing. No, he's looked good both games.
He was buzzing around out there, but all of a sudden in the third period, it just looked like they're trying to play 1980s-style hockey. And against a team like Anaheim that does have a little bit of skill, they're going to capitalize. And that's the entire Pacific. Every team has a couple of difference makers. And so for the Flames, these low-scoring games, they're not built for that. I 100% believe that their roster is not a 2-1, 3-2 hockey team.
No, I think that your roster can be that way if your top guys are these heavy players. And, I mean, outside of a couple of guys, Gaudreau's not heavy, Monahan's not heavy, Lindholm maybe, but, you know, with your top two guys, or what's supposed to be your top two guys, don't play that style, then, you know, it's tough to really lock them down. And, you know, in today's day and age of the NHL, if you got a 2-1 lead, you can't just go into a shell, because how often is that going to work? You know, you get scored on and you lose momentum. And, you know, for 90% of teams in the NHL, you know, you should be trying to score 2-1, not play to win 2-1. So it's an interesting style. I mean, Sutter definitely knows what he's doing. It's just, it's a different style that, you know, if you get scored on, you basically lose the game right there.
Up to QE2, the Oilers, they're 2-0 to start the season. They got the Ducks tonight. Mike Smith starts his third straight game. We'll break down the entire lineup later on. But give me your thoughts on the Oilers. Obviously, McDavid, big hat-trick, Battle of Alberta. Have you liked what they've seen? Do they look different than last year's team to you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the Oilers, everybody wants to make a big stink out of McDavid and Draisaitl playing together, but when you got a guy like Zach Hyman on your second line to offset Nugent Hopkins, and I've said this a lot before, you know, Zach Hyman last year was Dominic Cahoon for a lot of the season, or Tyler Ennis. So, you know, you get Zach Hyman who got paid handsomely to be in Edmonton, but, you know, he plays on your second line. It kind of fixes the rest of the lineup. And then your third line of Fogle, Ryan, and Zach Kastian gets a really nice goal on Saturday night there, where Fogle made a really nice move and threw it in front to Derek Ryan, who's just a good all-around player, and, you know, maybe a third line's a little much for him, but for the most part, Edmonton's looked pretty good, and everybody wants to make a big stink out of the Cody Ceci signing, and sure enough, he gives two breakaway passes in the first two games, and, you know, everybody compares that to basically he replaced Adam Larson, but they're two completely different players. If you watch Ceci, he gets the puck, he looks for McDavid, he gets the puck, he looks for Draisaitl, he gets the puck, he looks for an offensive play, and I think Edmonton getting those plays started from their back end is huge for their team. And, you know, overall, McDavid, Draisaitl, Puljujarvi, you know, that goal he scored Saturday, how many guys in Edmonton the past 5 years were going to be able to do that? So really good start for them. And of course, Mike Smith's been really good too.
Here's what pisses me off about the fans. And you brought it up too, and I didn't want to yell and scream, but everyone's like, oh, Cody Ceci, he's here to replace Larson and stuff. That's not how I see it. I would see it as Duncan Keith is almost the replacement for Adam Larson, and Cody Ceci is the replacement for Ethan Bear. That's one of the things that everyone wants to just make this easy one-for-one comparable swap out, but it's not that. You can't just pick and choose your spots of comparing these guys and, oh, Ethan Bear would have done this. Oh, Adam Larson wouldn't have done this. Adam Larson wouldn't have lost his guy in his D-zone like this guy. It's just over the top every single shift out there. People are on Keith and Ceci, and they want them to fail. I don't get the fandom in wanting someone to fail. Maybe I'm not a diehard jersey buying, hat wearing fan, but again, there's a certain aspect that it's just pump the brakes, let these guys play, and maybe we wait for more than two games before we decide whether we want to keep them or not. That's my thoughts on Oilers fans, but we got to move on. It's Cody Jansen, Adam Ermentrout with you live today from the Bro Rock Broadcast Studios in beautiful Alberta. Follow me on Twitter at Janner31 underscore in the show at World Hockey RPT. The NHL and headbutting, that seems to be getting along. You got Buchnevich the other day, and then Anderson in Calgary. He kind of headbutts Yamamoto, although in real time, it doesn't look like that big of a headbutt when you slow it down. Yes, there's head contact, obviously. What's happening? Is this something where guys are jumping into self-defense? Is this something new? I don't know. Adam, what's your thoughts? Do these guys deserve more than a $5,000 fine for headbutting?
Yeah, I mean, for Rasmus Anderson, I think in the Battle of Alberta, he seems to be culprit number one or two of, it's either him or Tkachuk or Zach Kassian, who's kind of stirring the pot. And Draisaitl after the game, they asked him out. He's like, I didn't see it, but he probably did it. You know, that's just kind of the type of player he is or whatever. But
they also asked Nurse though too, and Nurse says, oh, I'm not gonna stand up here on my high horse like I've never done anything dirty. So that's an interesting angle of, you know, who's going to judge and say, oh, Rasmus Anderson's dirty, Mark Giordano is dirty, when all those guys, you know what they're getting away with and what they have.
Yeah, and for Anderson, I mean, it definitely looked like a headbutt, and then you kind of saw his glove was in between, but I mean, it was still definitely, the motive was still there to headbutt him. And then Buchnevich, I think that was just kind of dumb. I mean, he's got fined before for high sticking or slashing or something like that, so bit of a snapshot. I don't think it's the norm. I mean, it's such a split section decision where if a guy gets in your face, you know, and your hands are tied or whatever, and he's got your hands pushed down, I guess that would be your instinct to headbutt somebody. I mean, you're wearing a helmet or a visor, I guess. But like, yeah, I don't really know if it's going to be the new norm, but I guess it's just a split second decision. And sure enough, we saw, because how many of these headbutts have we seen beforehand? Like last year, I can't even remember one.
I know. That's why I'm saying, is this going to be the new norm? A couple of thoughts coming in on Twitter. Of course, join the conversation anytime. If you comment on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, those ones, then it shows up on screen. Twitter sucks and I changed Periscope. But State of Hoppy says the Flames are my biggest wild card in the Pacific. No idea where to play some. And Alex Micheletti says Markstrom's off to a tough start. Sean Monahan's been a no-show so far. And Donnie says Oilers by a zillion for Oilers Ducks predictions tonight. So appreciate you guys chiming in anytime. But the big story, and it's a disappointing one, you know, at least the NHL did come forward and say, I guess there's no water, no weight to Evander Kane's ex-wife's claims. Some of the more serious ones, I guess we'll let the actual legal system solve that before we speak on it. But the whole fake vaccination card investigation, NHL suspends him for 21 games. You know, when you say, I want more drama like Ben Simmons in the NHL, Ben Simmons' drama isn't actually affecting anyone else. I mean, yeah, it affects his teammates, but there's no actual harm, no physical harm, no bullshit. It's just Ben Simmons being a baby. Same thing with Westbrook, Harden, all those guys. What Evander Kane's doing right now is such a bad look for the league, no matter what it is. His teammates don't even want him. I mean, you mentioned the Vlasic thing, and if that's what he's saying to the media, you got to imagine there's a 90% muzzle on him as well as all the other guys, and they probably are so sick and tired of him that they're just done with it.
Yeah, I mean, his whole situation, it's honestly kind of sad at this point. Like, the gets traded from Buffalo, gets traded to Winnipeg, and a lot of stuff went down in Winnipeg that I don't even know if it comes out. But he's done a lot of things wrong, and obviously there's an addiction issue there, given his gambling thing in San Jose during the playoffs, and then now this whole thing and the whole off-ice stuff with his wife. I mean, certainly hasn't done himself any favors. Where you can really feel bad for the guy at this point. So yeah, for Vlasic to come out and say that to the media, like he says that to the media, he's like, yeah, I don't know, like we'll see. Like that's kind of, you know, you wonder what they're really saying behind closed doors there. So yeah, it's definitely, I don't say a black eye for the entire NHL, but
it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think. Like I just don't know how he could possibly think that was right or anything. And like eventually, you know, I can't imagine him playing another game in the NHL at this point, right? You know, there's a new story every other week with him and all that. So it's really hard to imagine that. And, you know, in 21 games, I guess San Jose is going to reevaluate. But I think that, you know, there's no chance they're not trying to find a loophole where they can just get rid of the guy.
I would agree with that. State Hoppy hops in here and says Hellebuck's been trashed too. But yeah. I'm more willing to let early games slide for goalies. Interesting. And then Goose says could be worse. Could be Carter Hutton. So interesting. Couple of jabs being thrown. All in fun. Hey, let's speak in a goaltenders. Carter Hart. Rough. Maybe not rough. Not perfect against Vancouver, definitely in their first one. But he bounces back against Seattle. And he looked way better than Grubauer. That's for sure. So Carter Hart, where do you stand on him this season? Is this a bounce back year for him, or is this a season where maybe we get a fake out? We see a couple of flashes in the pan, but end of the day, he's not ready to lead an NHL team on a playoff run yet.
Yeah, I don't think he is, honestly. And I mean, he got paid a 3-year deal more so based on pedigree and potential. I guess you could say, like, for Philadelphia, they were so bad defensively last year and they kind of changed around 4 or 5 guys on their back end, you know, Nate Sealer, Ryan Ellis, Ristolainen, Keith Yandel. I guess it's not really helping your D, but yeah, I mean, not ready yet. Wasn't even ready to get called up from the AHL. He didn't have a 900 save percentage when he got called up. So we'll see what happens. Like the stuff's still there and his ability, I think, is still there. And, you know, he can have a good game every now and then, but then you see stuff in the Vancouver game where you're like, yeah, that's a guy whose confidence is kind of down and you're not really sure where to go with it, but makes $4 million a year. You probably don't want him sitting on your bench. So we'll see with Philly. I mean, they looked really good. I don't know if they look good or if Seattle looked bad yesterday. I watched that whole game, but Yeah, we'll see. Philly.
So you watched it. You don't have an opinion.
Like I mean, Seattle is pretty bad.
That's a tough one. Hey, ASAP Hockey hops in and says, "Hell no, the Flames aren't going to make the playoffs." So shout out to Ty Johnson, our guy there. Okay, one quick one for you, and it's the Olympics. It's the Sam Girard comment from earlier today. Pretty much was told he's not on the long list. No surprise. I don't think anyone had him on their Olympic team, and everyone freaking out, being like, "Why would you tell him this?" It's motivation. You want to tell them, hey, you're not close to the Olympic team yet. You got to step up your game. I don't see anything wrong with that, but maybe I'm old school.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was Doug Armstrong who told him, so I don't know like why he needs to motivate him. And just for me, like thinking about it, Shea Theodore, Darnell Nurse, Thomas Chabot, Morgan Riley, that's four guys I could list without even really thinking about, you know, the whole team and everybody's projections. So yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll be on the team, not because he's just bad or anything. It's just because there's guys who are ahead of him that he's not going to pass this year. So it's not even like Josh Morrissey. I think I'd rather Josh Morrissey over him too. So there's five guys right there. And yeah, I don't know if it's motivation or anything. It's just you're not on the team. But I mean, for him to come out and say that, like, I guess it gets people talking, but that's like, I don't know, Derek Ryan coming out and saying, yeah, I'm not on the long list for the American team, you know, like it's kind of like that. And shocker. And no disrespect to him, but it's not exactly breaking news that he got told he's probably not on the team.
Okay, this is crazy, and we got to go off to commercial break, but I just saw a tweet that Ben Simmons was fined $1.4 million by the Sixers for missing preseason. That's crazy. That's more than most NHLers make.
Yeah, well, he also pretty much got told, like, to do a drill and he said no, and then he got told again, and then he dropped the ball and left. Like, there's some, and you know, credit to that Joel Embiid is a bit of a character, but credit to him for just being like, I'm not babysitting this guy, he's a clown. So good on him. Trust the process.
Adam Armstrong right there. World Hockey Report's finest. We're heading off to a commercial break. When we come back, you know we love the ACHA, and our guy down in Missoula's doing it right. Tucker Sargent from the University of Montana Grizzlies hockey team joins us next. It's World Hockey Report, presented by Lordco Auto Parts.
World Hockey Report is partnering with Sports Travel Tours to bring you some incredible trips to watch hockey around the world. Sports Travel Tours has been creating hockey trips and tours since 1998. They've sent customers to the Winter Olympics, World Championships, every team in the NHL, as well as the KHL in Russia. And now, for the first time, they've been appointed official tour supplier to the Spengler Cup in Switzerland. As you all know, the Spengler Cup is the world's oldest invitational hockey tournament, set in the stunning mountains of Davos. It's also the best way to spend the time in between Christmas and New Year's. So, cheer on Team Canada in Davos this year with Sports Travel Tours exclusive packages. For information and to book, go to sportstraveltours.com. That's sportstraveltours.com, and sign up to get exclusive discounts and trip priority.
NFL fans hungry for a big win this week? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has you covered. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game, and if they do, you win $200 in free bets. Winner, winner, chicken dinner, it's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today. Use promo code THPN. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game and win $200 in free bets. If they win, you win with promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 years or older in New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What we do here is go back.
We're working on getting connected with Tucker Sargent here with the University of Montana Grizzlies hockey team. Maybe we'll have to get him on a little bit later. We'll jump ahead to some Oilers preview for tonight. What's going on? It's World Hockey Report, presented by Lordco Auto Parts. You guys already know. Visit Lordco's in-store truck centers at select locations. The absolute best experience you'll have going and buying auto parts. Anything you need, the staff are friendly, the stores are clean, and they have superior service to anyone. Join the conversation anytime. We're on 12 Ounce Sports, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, 120zsportsnetwork.com/lives, Zingo TV, channel 761. You can watch us anywhere. I'm telling you, you don't need to miss a show ever. And if you do, we won't, we'll forgive you. Go download the podcast, the Hockey Podcast Network, and use promo code THPN on DraftKings. All right, let's get to some Oilers thoughts here. Actually, no, before we do that, I got to tell you, hey, we're coming to you live from the ProRock Broadcast Studios in beautiful Alberta. And let me tell you, I don't know how well you guys can see this. Oh, wrong way. You can't see it fully. But this ProRock hockey stick, unbelievable. New weapon. I'm feeling like Marty St. Louis out here. I'm telling you guys, it's crazy. It's crazy what they do. I tell them, hey, you know, that was one of my favorite players growing up. And yes, I did like the Flames and Tampa broke my heart, but I was a huge St. Louis fan, huge fan of a TPS rubber hockey stick. They say, let me surprise you. Get a text from Corey the other day, says, go check the mail. Boom. It's spot on. It's incredible. Anything they can do. And it's the best stick on the market. I'm telling you, it'll go head to head with the best Bowers, the best CCMs, the best Warriors. And I would say arguably it's better because it's more customizable. It's cheaper. It's at a better price point. It's Canadian made. And you're supporting a Canadian company when you buy a ProRock hockey stick. Adam's going to get his own. I got a few now. And I mean, hey, they keep surprising me with this. I got the hoodie on, like everything. Everything Corey and Elena have done there, they are changing the hockey stick game. So let's get to some thoughts, though. We do have a game coming up here tonight. Oilers and Ducks, 7 o'clock puck drop at Rogers Place. I'll break down some stuff after. I want you to hear what Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had to say, because obviously this Ducks team's a little bit different. They haven't played an American team in a couple of years. So, you know, you kind of know what to expect. You kind of got to go through the roster, see some of these guys. You got to go through video. But I think Nuge broke it down well. Have a listen.
Yeah, they definitely have some young skill. Obviously, we haven't played them or any other American team for a while now. So it's definitely a different team than the last time we saw them. But they still have some of those veterans. Obviously, Getzlaf, he'll be leading them. I mean, I think he does a lot of good things for their young core. But we got to make sure that we snuff out that skill as quick as we can. We know they played last night, so we got to get into them as soon as we can. And beware of who's on the ice, but make sure that we just play them hard.
Oilers and Ducks. That goes tonight. Yesterday, the Ducks ended up beating the Calgary Flames. So they're 2-1 on the season. The Oilers are 2-0. They also beat Calgary. Battle of Alberta. McDavid with the hat trick. He's got 3 goals, 2 assists on the season. 5 points in 2 games. What does that put him on pace for? 100. Doing math on the spot right now. 164, probably a little bit more. Like 200 points? I don't know. I think 150 is possible for him. He's that good. He's incredible. So I don't think 150 points is out of question. I know some people think that's absolutely crazy. I don't. Breaking down the Ducks win last night, though, they fell behind 1-0. Blake Coleman had the goal, scores in his Flames debut. Cam Fowler with the bounce back on the power play. Shattenkirk, Troy Terry pick up assist. Lindholm made it 2-1 for the Flames in the second period. Then late in the third, Ricard Raquel has the tying goal, and Jamie Drysdale in overtime with his first of the season. Troy Terry with the assist. So Terry gets a couple of assists. John Gibson was good. Gibson, what did he stop? 41 out of 43, I believe it is. The Ducks only had 27 shots on goal. Markstrom, definitely not his best outing. And it's interesting for the Ducks because this team had the worst power play of all time, I believe, last year. 8.9%. I believe it was 8.9. I thought I had it written down somewhere. 8.9%. I think they only had 11 power play goals all season. Like, they were an absolute tire fire. And then you go back a couple of years ago, and they were 3-3 with the Oilers. I know the Oilers haven't been, you know, this high horse team forever, but that's still 3-3 in the 1920 season. They split that one. McDavid, he's elevated his game. Puljujärvi's elevated his game. Why? For the Ducks, I think they've just gone downhill since their 2015 and 2017 runs. I think that's pretty obvious to say. What can Gibson do? Well, he's not going to be playing tonight. They're going to go with Anthony Stolarz, who started against Minnesota, stopped 41 of 43 for them, had a loss against Mike Smith. .953 save percentage for him. He gets his third start of the season. Another interesting comparable piece to be watching here is, what's the ratio going to be for Smith and Koskinen? Is Koskinen only going to get the games against Arizona? I don't see them starting them against Vegas. I think since they're going to be staying in Vegas for a couple extra nights, you got to go with Smith. You got to try a win. I think that will be the route that they attempt to take. You know, win the game, go out, party for a couple of nights, and then you move on. You get ready for the rest of your season. Koskinen, though, the Oilers goaltending, they've allowed 85 shots in two games. That's 42.5 against a game. You can't be doing that. And especially, a team coached by Dave Tippett, you would assume them to lock it down a little bit. Does it come to their defense? Are they too offensive defensively that they are giving up more than normal? If that's the case, maybe you sacrifice it if they are going to be putting in 4 or 5 a game. Because if they're popping that in the back of the net, you're still going to win. We talked about it with Adam. Interesting dynamic. CeCe and Keith on the back end. Different pairing. Also, Dave Tippett did have some comments here on that fourth line as Devin Shore is going to tag back in. He's got Perlini and Turris. And one of the things on Oilers Twitter, they always talk about, this is the deepest team in so long. I think Dave Tippett really agrees with that.
I'd like to get them more involved. You know, some of it depends on how the flow of the game goes. They were a good line in exhibition. They're... they play solid, like a smart game. Three veteran players play a smart game. Shore was real solid at center ice, and the other two guys kind of used their attributes accordingly, and they were a good line. Like, they were a plus line. Perlini, the puck was jumping off a stick and in the net, so we'll give them an opportunity tonight, and hopefully they can get back to where they were.
They could be one of the most effective fourth lines in the entire Pacific, if not the entire West. Tell me, join the conversation anytime. Let me know your thoughts. Is there a better fourth line than the Oilers have right now? Because I think with Shore centering Perlini and Turris, that's as effective as it gets. You've got grit, you've got responsibility defensively, and you've got Turris and Perlini who can put the biscuit in the basket. I mean, Perlini's a great player. He can rip the pill. What do you have, 6 goals in the preseason? I think you give him some opportunities. He'll probably easily have a dozen goals this season, if not more. Shore's a responsible guy. They trust him on defensive zone faceoffs. They trust him late in games. And for Kyle Turris, he's kind of had to change his game now that he's moved over the wing. He's really adapting to his new role, and I think for the Oilers, you like to see that, where maybe you don't have to rely upon a McLeod or a Benson to hold down the fort on that fourth line, because that's a risk you don't want to take, especially when you get in the playoffs. You can't be rolling those guys through the playoffs, getting them experience when you're in a win-now mode, which I would say the Oilers are. And tell me if I'm wrong. Been wrong once or twice. We'll move along, though. Oilers, Ducks, that's tonight, 7 o'clock. I also put out there, what should the NHL do with shootouts? The Leafs, the Rags, exciting game, one of the best 3-on-3 overtimes we might have had in NHL history. I mean, this is up there with when they did the World Cup of Hockey and it was Team North America versus Team Sweden. Like, this is up there with that. Shesterkin looked great. And for the Leafs, they win. They win. Dr. Super Bowl says, what should you do with it? No points for making it to overtime. 10 minutes of 3-on-3. If no points scored, then both teams get a point. No shootout. That's interesting. I agree with the no points for making it to overtime. I don't think there should be a loser point. I think that's got to be ditched. I still think you need a way to solve it. Because if you just say, hey, if you get through 10 minutes and no one scores, you both get a point. Teams are going to be sitting back. Looks like we might have a call coming in here. I think we'll head off to the Quack Stats hotline in a second as Tucker Sargent from the University of Montana joins us here on the hotline. But Oilers Ducks tonight at 7. Maybe we'll break it down. We'll open up the hotline a little bit later on here, but let's snap it over to Quack Stats hotline. And Tucker Sargent joins us live on World Hockey Report. Tucker, how's things going in the 406?
It's doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Glad you can make it. And I hope you don't mind us taking, you know, 5-10 minutes of your time here. Maybe we'll have to take a commercial. We'll wait and let producer Bryce, you know, give me the gears if I miss anything. But man, what a program you got going in Montana. And I mean, as a former Mauler myself, hey, I spent time in the A-Dub days. What a place to live. And what you're doing with that team special. So I wanted to pick your brain, obviously big ACHA supporters on the show. But when did you decide, like, hey, we're bringing back Grizz hockey here? Like, this tier three pay to play stuff keeps going downhill. It keeps flopping. These teams aren't lasting. And it, honestly, it was kind of just, it was, you know, turning into a dumpster fire post A-Dub days. When did you decide, I want to bring Grizz hockey back to Missoula and it's going to succeed?
You know, it's something that I've wanted to do for about the last 10 years. The problem is I also coach and run the lacrosse program here. So the biggest concern was about the time to do it, but we had a pretty good formula. We've made a very successful lacrosse team at the club ranks in their version of what the ACHA is. And so we had the formula, knew what to do with it. We knew that Missoula from the days of the Maulers and everything is, and the men's league and the youth participation here is an extremely good hockey community. And so it was just, and if you put the Grizz brand on it, the University of Montana behind it, you know, you just, it has that many more viewers. So it was always known that this could happen. It was just finding some partners in doing it that could help bear the load of what the time and energy it would take. And, you know, finally with the Bruins leaving town, it just seemed like, man, this is really the opportunity to kind of launch this thing. You know, there's some kids that have been here we can recruit immediately from the Bruins, that wanted to join in and stay in Missoula and play at a decently high level. And then found some coaches that also wanted to, you know, shared my vision for it. And so really this year, just the timing all sort of worked out with the departure of one program and leaving the void and knowing that, you know, the Grizz brand is so strong and the fan base is so loyal, we could just jump in and fill that.
So obviously the university allowing you to go with the Grizz program, helping you out a little bit, that's huge. And what you've done with the club lacrosse team there, I know you were involved with that back in 2012 when I was down in Missoula too. But, you know, when you kind of add all this together, what's the ceiling for this program? I know ACHA, it's growing, and you see the top programs like Liberty, you see Lindenwood and all of those. But I mean, when you look at this Grizz program, clearly you've got one of the best setups now in the West. Honestly, it's better than UNLV. You're drawing in crowds like the old Missoula-Helena rivalry days, Tucker. I mean, it was insane in there. I watched the game against Montana State. What a comeback for one. I mean, you're down 4-1 in the third, and all of a sudden the Jets turn on. But what's the ceiling? Like, where's the next step? You're putting 1,300 in the barn, and Missoula hasn't seen that in 7+ years.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's honestly the hottest ticket in town right now. I mean, people are buzzing. People are talking about it. It's super exciting. You know, so one, you got to maintain that. And then two is, you know, we got to start putting together a roster for that can compete. You know, our goal is in the next 5 years, competing for nationals and give this town, you know, they're cheering for hockey because it's back now. Next step is we want them to cheer for hockey because we're competing for something. And, you know, the first year we're ineligible. It's kind of our probationary year. So we're just trying to put on as good of a show as we can, getting sponsors involved, getting the, you know, the barn lit up, the music, the lights, making it an event that people want to go to. You know, people are already talking about setting up tailgates for games. So, you know, we got to, you know, work with the rink, figure out a way if, you know, help the rink grow, you know, physically, if we can get some more seats in there, get some more energy. But, you know, just the exposure has been so tremendous. We had the president of the university come out and see a game, the Montana State game that you just referenced. And he was, I mean, honestly, the guy looked floored when he walked in. He just could not believe that there were this many people that were cheering on the University of Montana. So, you know, continuing those partnerships with the local rink, the youth hockey, growing hockey in the state of Montana, and then getting the exposure for the University of Montana, and just kind of, you know, the rising tide floats all ships. And if we can be the, you know, that tide there to, you know, grow hockey for youth and also then, you know, grow the University of Montana by retaining and cultivating more incoming players from out of state and then getting the in-state kids wanting to come play here as well.
Tucker, now, and I've talked to a bunch of people, I still have a lot of connections down in Missoula, and one of the biggest things that everyone says when I asked about you was he gives a damn. Do you feel that your commitment to Montana, to Missoula, has helped this thing succeed from the get-go? Because people know that you actually care about the community. You're not just there to charge the kids $7,000, $10,000, say, hey, you're playing junior A hockey, congrats. Here's a couple of free gloves, whatever. You know, and we'll, you know, feed you some promises about playing in whatever new junior league that's popping up. Do you think your actual commitment and roots in the community have led to this success here? Because I think that's the biggest thing that multiple people have told me when I asked about how did this program just pop out of nowhere and become the most successful thing in Missoula hockey since the AWHL days.
Yeah, I think that's very flattering that people say that. I mean, truthfully, I wouldn't charge kids if we didn't have to. It's not out to make, I don't want to profit off the players. You know, if we can get the program sustainable through, you know, sponsorships with the corporate sponsorships that are also beneficial to them, you know, you don't want to just take people's money, but you got to give something in return. And then, you know, putting on a show that people feel like the ticket price is worth their money. And I think we've got, you know, it's a very reasonably priced ticket. It's a good show. It's a lot of fun. You know, we've got cheerleaders, we've got music, we've got lights. Like it's an event. So you're paying for entertainment. If that can help offset the cost, you know, that helps financially get this going because we did start with nothing. But I think a lot of the reason that we were able to get this going right away was one, we got two coaches that really jumped in and helped recruit some players right away that had talent that could, you know, compete in a first year program. And then also just, yeah, connections with the community. You know, my wife also owns four radio stations here in town, and her connections and her sales staff jumping on and, you know, having the support, the media support to get the word out, tell people about hockey, that it is a big deal, that the Grizz are back. So, you know, it is connections, but yeah, you have to care. And if you, you know, if you want to have a successful program, everyone has to care, from the, you know, the admin side to the coaches to the players. And that's something that we preach all the time. And then I think, you know, people, once internally you have that, then externally that's felt and people begin to care as well.
So what I always thought when I played down there, that there was a little bit of a disconnect that was unfortunate between the junior team and the university, not the college. But I always felt that there was a disconnect, and it was just an underutilized partnership opportunity where once a year we'd put on these Montana Grizzly jerseys. And I mean, hey, credit to Burks. He'd fill the barn. He'd make his money on those nights. But other than that, there was no connection. It was just like, oh, we existed and we were almost competing with them for an audience for football and basketball. When realistically, I don't think that's a competition. If you like hockey, that doesn't mean that you have to like football. You have to like basketball. You're going to where your friends are going. You're going to where the party is, where the fun is. And if hockey can put on that environment, I think that's where people get drawn in. And you see your student section when you put those new bleachers there. It's packed. It's as good as any student section in the ACHA. It's up there with Liberty. It's up there with Kentucky. It's right there with the best. So when you look at this team as a whole, what do you think is the next step hockey-wise to improving it? Is it going out of your way to recruit better players? Are you going to try push for ACHA D1? Are you going to stay with the D2 ranks and, you know, not capitalize, but take advantage of those rivalries against Montana State, against Providence, against, you know, going over to North Dakota and stuff like that, maybe bringing in a UND club hockey team for a weekend or stuff like that? Or where do you see it? Because I know you want to improve hockey-wise, but is it taking a step up to D1? Is that any benefit?
You know, I think right now we're just crawling. So, you know, the next step is learning to walk. And I think D2 is the place that we need to do that in. And having the rivalries with Montana State and Great Falls right there, you know, I think that's really important for the state of hockey and also where we're at. Plus a lot of the other, you know, a lot of the fan interest is driven by schools that they know. And a lot of D2 teams are, you know, you talked about, you know, the passion for football here. A lot of the D2 teams are also Big Sky Conference football teams. So, the fan base understands those schools. They're easy schools to sell. There's already established rivalries. So we really need to just cultivate our program you know, get through the first year, you know, with a reasonable amount of success, continue to grow players, continue to recruit more. You know, we need to grow our roster. We played that great game against Montana State, but, you know, they were big and physical. I mean, that is a very good, well-established team, and they, our players got beat. They got the win, but they got beat up. We paid a heavy price for it, and, you know, we played them the following night, and you could see that we just didn't have enough bodies to compete at that level two nights in a row. So, you know, there's definitely some growing that we got to do. I don't know if we need to get to a D1 or level or not. I think it's just see where this takes us and continue to try and pack the house and provide entertainment. I think that there, you know, right now there's a great level at the higher end of D2 that we want to achieve to, that we can provide good hockey and good entertainment and also be able to recruit players, you know, in the West that want to come and get that full college experience and play in front of their students. And I think having the students there is just tremendous for, I mean, it amplifies the players, it amplifies the barn. The other fans love the energy the kids bring, although sometimes inappropriate, but that's the beauty of college hockey. So I think that, you know, we're just learning to play in this sandbox. So there's no plans on going anywhere right now.
Tucker, I got two more questions for you. One's real talk. One is absolutely crazy, but I think it's an interesting one that people want me to ask. And the text line's blowing up here. Hockey in Montana. We shared a bunch of those pictures from the games, and they're like, that's ACHA hockey. Like, holy, like a lot of the guys play D3 and they never played in a crowd like that. But when I talk about the actual hockey side, and Tucker, you've seen it all from junior hockey, one of the biggest things that drew in crowds in the NORPAC and the A-Dub days in Missoula was fighting. And that's just honest. I mean, fans loved it there. They loved that aspect of hockey. Now with college, you don't really get that. Is there a certain aspect outside of goal scoring that you see fans start to enjoy a little bit more? Do they miss that aspect of the game where there isn't really fighting in college hockey? Or have they really kind of learned to understand the game a little bit more and maybe appreciate just big hits and stuff and not so much? Because it was all the time. It was like whenever you talk with a fan, it'd be like, oh, we love fighting. We love fighting. When you guys fight, that's the best. What's the vibe around fans now with that?
You know, I think it's something that if it were to happen, people would get behind it, but I don't think they necessarily miss it. Yeah, but I don't think they miss it. I think it's becoming more of an educated fan base. You know, there's other things that get them going. Like a big hit always gets people going. You know, a goal, you know, scoring goals, that sort of thing. You know, and because it's been a while since they've seen it, I don't think it's something that they're necessarily missing at the moment, and, you know, which is fine. You can't do it in college hockey. So, you know, we're going to live without it.
That's fair. Okay. And here's a crazy one for you. And we'll leave it at this. Tucker Sargent, my guest, GM of Montana Grizzlies hockey. If you haven't checked him out already, especially if you're thinking of making a road trip down there or something, this is it's better than any junior hockey atmosphere you'll ever see in probably Western Montana outside of the WHL. But looking ahead, obviously, there's a lot of rumblings of Pac-12 maybe getting involved in the NCAA Div 1 hockey world. And tell me if I'm crazy here. If you put a 3,000-seat rink in Missoula today with a D1 hockey team with full funding behind it, like a University of Alabama Huntsville, do you think they would do better than an Alabama Huntsville, than an American International College? And I know there's travel, but you're not that far away from North Dakota. You're not that far away from Minnesota. You're not that far away from Colorado. If there was a proper 3,000, 4,000 seat building, do you think a Div 1 team eventually could survive in Missoula?
I think without a doubt. I mean, I think that, you know, if you had that, then you could grow the fan base. I think the Grizz fan base is large enough anyways. Hockey culture is strong enough here. I think you could. Obviously, there's major financial constraints that you're talking about there that would have to get stepped over initially. But I mean, when you're comparing it to an area like that, like the hockey culture in the North and the Northwest is, I would imagine, a fair bit stronger. Now, I've never been to Alabama Huntsville.
I'm just taking a shot at them because I can.
Yeah, no, I hear you, but I mean, I've always been a big picture, dream big guy. I mean, I'm already talking to people about putting video boards in the Glacier Ice Rink. And for those of you who've been there, that's not the rink that deserves a video board. But, you know, if we can make it bigger and better, we're going to try and do that.
So when does the outdoor game, outdoor classic at Washington Grizzly Stadium against MSU happen? How do we get involved in that? Let's get a rink going in there.
Man,
let's
get 20,000. We were talking about that last night. You let's know, what, how many people have to go to make that happen? But yeah, if you know how to put ice down in a football stadium, let me know, because I think we could sell it. I think we could sell it and actually make it be a profitable venture.
That would be absolutely insane. You guys, there's no way the NCAA wouldn't come knocking on the door. And I agree with you. I do think people would show up. If you get a brawl of the, you know, whatever, Grizz-Cat rivalry, I think you would put serious damage in that stadium and fans would show up.
Tucker, yeah, now you're giving me goosebumps just thinking about it right now, man.
Hey, Missoula hits home for me, and I'm always happy anytime I can connect with someone. I'm so glad that you're there and taking over right now, because it was sickening to watch some of the junior hockey there. And I mean, you don't have to say anything on it. I just hated where junior hockey was going, especially in that area. I'm so happy to see Montana hockey back and succeeding. I mean, you guys are thriving there. So thank you again. Best of luck this season. And we'll be in touch. I guarantee you that.
All right. Thanks. Call anytime.
Tucker Sargent right there. The GM of the University of Montana Grizzlies. That's a fun conversation for me, guys. I mean, I know you can hear it, you can see it, but that's something that really hits home when we can talk about the University of Montana, hockey in Missoula, hockey in Montana succeeding. They are doing it right. Already, we are way overdue for a break. Sorry about that. Yeah, producer Bryce, we'll be fine. We're going to come back. We'll wrap up the show. It's World Hockey Report, presented by Lord Co. Auto Parts, and we are coming to you live on 12 Ounce Sports.
World Hockey Report is partnering with Sports Travel Tours to bring you some incredible trips to watch hockey around the world. Sports Travel Tours has been creating hockey trips and tours since 1998. They've sent customers to the Winter Olympics, World Championships, every team in the NHL, as well as the KHL in Russia. And now, for the first time, they've been appointed official tour supplier to the Spengler Cup in Switzerland. As you all know, the Spengler Cup is the world's oldest invitational hockey tournament, set in the stunning mountains of Davos. It's also the best way to spend the time in between Christmas and New Year's. So, cheer on Team Canada in Davos this year with Sports Travel Tours exclusive packages. For information and to book, go to sportstraveltours.com. That's sportstraveltours.com, and sign up to get exclusive discounts and trip priority.
NFL fans hungry for a big win this week? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has you covered. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game, and if they do, you win $200 in free bets. Winner, winner, chicken dinner, it's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today. Use promo code THPN. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game and win $200 in free bets. If they win, you win with promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 years or older in New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What we do here is go back, 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 back.
Alrighty, it's Cody Jansen, World Hockey Report, presented by Lord Co. Auto Parts. Find a store near you at lordco.com. Let's wrap it up here and get those questions in anytime you want to join the conversation at World Hockey RPT on Twitter. We're coming to you live on 12 Ounce Sports. What a conversation with Tucker Sargent right there. That was a fun one. And if you're a fan of the ACHA, I highly recommend going back and listening on the Hockey Podcast Network. The podcast can be downloaded anywhere you get your podcast from. Coming to you live from the Pro Rock Broadcast Studios in beautiful Alberta. Follow me on Twitter at Janner31 and the show at World Hockey RPT. Everyone knows my favorite hockey turtle of the year is the Spangler Cup, and all the great people at Sports Travel Tours want you to experience it as well. Check out the available packages at sportstraveltours.com. Go check out the Spangler Cup. Interesting piece here from the Colorado Avalanche as we snap it around for some NHL news. Forward Nathan MacKinnon, he's going to make his season debut against the Washington Capitals following a pair of negative COVID tests. And this was his quote: "I didn't feel anything, so the vaccine must work." He was on COVID protocol a little bit earlier. And this one's per NHL Rumors Daily. I'm just seeing this. A lot of Jack Eichel talk coming up for tomorrow. Blake Wheeler, he's tested positive for COVID-19. Couple of interesting things here. Devin Shore has been activated. He'll play tonight, fourth line for the Oilers. They play the Ducks at 7 o'clock. Ryan McLeod's been loaned to Bakersfield, and Kirill Maximov cleared waivers. His contract is going to be terminated. Nick Patan has been assigned down to the minors as Brock Besser gets reactivated in Vancouver. Mike's in the chat says Kraken should replace Grubauer. Mike, that's a hot take, but he was hot garbage against Philly. I don't know what was going on there. I'd love to know your thoughts about the fight. I think it was it Nate Thompson? Laid a lick, and I don't have that in front of me. What a scrap, though. Always down for pretty good. Wow. Trevor Harris got vaccinated. Some big CFL news there. Breaking during the show. We won't dive into that, though. Dmitry Timoshov as well from the Islanders. He's put on unconditional waivers. He's going to have his contract terminated as well. Mike, I'm interested. I mean, I know you're a new hockey guy. And, you know, if you're going to chime in here, join the conversation while we got a couple of minutes left. Have the Kraken disappointed you? Has the road starts kind of killed the vibe? I want to see them at Climate Pledge Arena. I want to see that place buzzing. I don't think they're actually ready for it, but it's like the Isles. This whole 20-game road trip is just poor planning. I want to see that energy. I want to see, I know Vegas, their whole situation was completely different and unexpected with the whole shooting and everything that went on there. But that's how you build a fan base. That's how you build a core. And right now for Seattle, I don't feel the hype that's around them as they should as an expansion team. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right. Connect anytime. If you got any questions, get them in now. You got about 1 minute. Oilers and Ducks tonight. As I said, the Oilers are 2-0 the season. Mike Smith starts his third straight game. Anthony Stolarz goes for the Ducks after John Gibson picked up a 3-2 win in Calgary last night. The Ducks have one of the worst power plays of all time last season. Maybe they've turned it around a little bit. I mean, you got Shattenkirk, Fowler, you got Drysdale on the back end. This is a team that's looking up, but I still think that their window is probably 4 or 5 years away. Mike says they're so busy trying to be tough at the start, they got fired. They get fired. Get tired. Oh, I got it. That's weird. That's just the font here. Kind of messes with me. I agree. And I don't think Philly's that great of a team. So for Seattle to get smacked around by them, shocking. Very shocking, to say the least. Will be interesting to see, though. I can't wait. I can't wait until they're up here in Edmonton. I'll watch them. Mike, maybe we'll get you out to a game. And Bastion quit during the fight like our team did in that game. Oh, Mike, bring the heat. I got time for you every day of the week. Be sure to check out Sports Or and AM Drive. Mike's the absolute best, and he's now a hockey guy. We've crowned him hockey guy now. Him and Aaron can debate that every morning, 8 o'clock Mountain Standard Time, 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 Pacific in the morning, if you want to watch on 12-ounce sports. But that's going to do it for me. World Hockey Report presented by Lordco Auto Parts. Thanks to Adam Irmantrout, Tucker Sargent, for joining the show. If you miss any of it, download on the Hockey Podcast Network. Eric Krause is our social media manager. Bryce Buns is our lead producer. And I'm Cody Jansen. Until next week, everyone, be kind, be better.